VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, we hear about May Day protests around the world. Later, Dan Friedel presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the first day of May, known as May Day, is considered a day to celebrate workers around the world. On Monday, however, workers around the world took to the streets to express their unhappiness about the money they make, their time off, the high cost of living, and the age of retirement. In the former Soviet Union, May Day was a time to celebrate communism. But on Monday in Russia, celebrations were overshadowed by the country's war with Ukraine. In France, workers want the government to reconsider a decision to increase the retirement age by 2 years to 64. Police said they were concerned about protests getting larger if other groups joined in. Some groups there were protesting climate change. Others were concerned about how the 2024 Summer Olympics will affect life in Paris. In Spain, labor union members said their pay has not gone up to match inflation and the higher cost of living. In the Spanish capital of Madrid, a group of lawyers said old-fashioned rules that require them to be on duty every day of the year must be changed. Lawyers have used social media to show themselves working from the hospital or on days that family members died. Police in Turkey prevented protesters from reaching Istanbul's main square, Taksim. More than 10 protesters were arrested. Taksim Square is where many people died after a stampede broke out during a May Day event in 1977. In South Korea, thousands of people attended the largest May Day protests since 2020. One protester shouted, "The price of everything has increased except our wages. Increase our minimum wages." In Japan, workers, lawmakers, and academics gathered in Tokyo's Yoyogi Park to demand higher pay. They criticized Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's plan to put more money into Japan's defense budget. The leader has said he plans to look at raising pay for workers. Indonesian workers marched against a new law called the Job Creation Law, which they say will only help business owners. In Taiwan, thousands of workers protested labor policies ahead of the 2024 presidential election there. They said they did not like President Tsai Ing-wen's labor decisions. In Pakistan, government restrictions on gatherings prevented large public rallies. However, smaller groups gathered indoors to demand more support for workers and higher wages. Workers in Beirut, Lebanon, marched through the streets. They included members of unions and migrant domestic workers. The country is in the middle of an economic crisis. About 75% of people in Lebanon are living in poverty because of high inflation.
This time of year in the U.S., many people are thinking about their gardens and getting their land ready for warmer weather. Some people are thinking about planting flowers. Others want to plant trees. For those who love trees, there is a national day for tree planting called Arbor Day. Arbor Day is observed on the last Friday in April. However, some states pick their own Arbor Day depending on their climate. The aim is to have the observance on the best day of the year to plant a tree. When thinking about trees, remember that they will usually live many years longer than the people who plant them. One gardening expert who spoke to the Associated Press says it is important to make good choices today if you are considering planting trees for tomorrow. Daniel Herms is an insect expert who centers his research on how trees respond to stress. He works for Davy Tree Expert Company, a landscaping business in the Midwestern state of Ohio. The company creates and cares for gardens, lawns, and properties. Things are changing faster than the lifespan of trees, he said. That means the weather and the kinds of insects that live in an area today may be different in 20 or 30 years. However, many trees can live for 50 years or more. That means people who plant trees today have to think about the results of their choices tomorrow. Herms said some trees will thrive and some will not over the next 20 or 30 years, depending on the traits that make them adapt to the changing climate. So, how do you choose a good tree? One way to do it might be to choose the state tree where you live. However, Herms said, some state trees no longer thrive in their own states. For example, the state trees of California are the very large redwoods and sequoias. They are two of the largest and tallest trees in the world. However, the trees grew that way along the Northern California coast because of the moisture in the air that comes from the ocean. The wet air is called fog. Herms said there is less fog along the coast of California because of climate change. In the future, the sequoias and redwoods may not grow as well, he warned. Other state trees are in the same situation. Herms said they could do well in other places, but they are not certain to live long lives in their home states. They include the blue spruce of Colorado, the western white pine of Idaho, the eastern white pine of Maine, and West Virginia's sugar maple. But if you have a tree growing on your land that is now vulnerable, Herms said, it is not necessary to remove it. You just have to take care of it. In most cases, it can continue to grow with a proactive healthcare program, Herms said. Proactive means making sure conditions are good for the growth and health of the tree. That includes giving the tree proper water. If it is drier where you live today than when you planted the tree. In addition, you can add nutrients to the soil to make sure the tree stays healthy. A trained arborist, a person who knows how to care for trees, can help. People are concerned about keeping trees healthy not only because they look good when they grow. Trees produce oxygen, they provide shade and cooling during hot weather, and they reduce water runoff. Runoff is water that comes during storms that is not absorbed into the ground. Herms said that trees also trap carbon, so they can contribute to climate goals. In fact, trees need carbon dioxide to grow. Even if you do not live in the U.S., you can still join in celebrating trees. If you are thinking of planting a tree this year, Herms suggests choosing a tree that will do well, even if your area gets a little bit warmer as the tree grows. Check with a local college or university if you need some help finding this information. If your city has an arboretum, a place that grows and cares for trees, there is likely someone there who can help. Here is some basic information about planting trees. First, dig a hole as deep and twice as large as the tree's root ball. Then add a generous amount of compost as extra material into the soil as you fill the hole. Water the tree for at least its first 3 years. Herms said young trees need at least 2.5 centimeters of water each week. That can come from rain or extra water you provide. I'm Dan Friedel.
You just heard this week's Health and Lifestyle Report, presented by Dan Friedel. Dan joins me now to talk more about trees and Arbor Day. Hi, Dan. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Ashley. I have a question for you. What is your favorite tree?
I would have to say the Southern Magnolia. These trees produce huge, beautiful white flowers that bloom all summer long. To me, the flowers smell like a mix of lemon and vanilla. What's your favorite tree, Dan?
Well, Ashley, when I go to California, I'm really thankful for grapefruit trees. I enjoy eating those fruits, and if I am there in January, the grapefruit trees are full. Breakfast is just outside the door.
That sounds perfect. I'm a fan of citrus, too. Dan, can you tell our listeners about the start of Arbor Day and why people were asked to plant trees then and how it is different now?
Sure, Ashley. I think the main thing is that 150 years ago, when Arbor Day was new, the United States was young, and trees were going to provide important material, such as wood for homes, food to eat, like the grapefruit that I was talking about, and fuel for keeping warm. Now it is a different time. Trees still provide all those things, but people are much more aware of the other benefits, such as how trees help clean the air and keep places cool.
That is a good point. Trees remain extremely important, perhaps even more so than during those first Arbor Days. Thanks again, Dan, for joining me on today's program.
You're welcome, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The D-Day invasion of June 6, 1944 was the largest amphibious assault in history, and it led to the end of World War II in Europe. Allied forces stormed the beaches at Normandy, France. The invasion marked a turning point in the war in Europe as Hitler's hold on the continent began to crumble. On today's Making of a Nation, we take you back to that event, beginning with a decision by the Allied commander, General Dwight David Eisenhower. On June 5, 1944, a huge Allied force waited for the order to invade German-occupied France. The invasion had been planned for the day before, but a storm forced a delay. At 3:30 in the morning, the Allied commander, General Dwight Eisenhower, was meeting with his aides. The storm still blew outside the building. General Eisenhower and the other generals were discussing whether they should attack the next day. A weatherman entered the room. He reported that the weather would soon improve. All eyes turned toward Eisenhower. The decision was his. His face was serious, and for a long time he was silent. Finally, he spoke. "Okay," he said. "We will go." And so the largest military invasion ever known, D-Day, took place on June 6, 1944. The German leader, Adolf Hitler, had known the invasion was coming, but he did not know where the Allied force would strike. Most Germans expected the Allies would attack at Calais, but they were wrong. Eisenhower planned to strike along the French coast of Normandy, across the English Channel. The Second World War was then almost 5 years old. The Germans had won the early battles and gained control of most of Europe. But in 1942 and 43, the Allies slowly began to gain back land from the Germans in North Africa, Italy, and Russia. And now, finally, the British, American, Canadian, and other Allied forces felt strong enough to attack across the English Channel. Eisenhower had 150,000 men and 12,000 planes for the attack. But most importantly, he had surprise on his side. Even after the invasion began, General Erwin Rommel and other German military leaders could not believe that the Allies had really attacked at Normandy. But attack they did. On the night of June 5th, thousands of Allied soldiers parachuted behind German lines. Then, Allied planes began dropping bombs on German defenses. And in the morning, thousands of ships approached the beaches, carrying men and supplies. The battle quickly became fierce and bloody. The Germans had strong defenses. They were better protected than the Allied troops on the beaches. But the Allied soldiers had greater numbers. Slowly, they moved forward on one part of the coast, then another.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force.
General Dwight Eisenhower.
This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe. I have this message for all of you. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching. All patriots, men and women, young and old, have a part to play in the achievement of final victory. To members of resistance movements, whether led by nationals or by outside leaders, I say, follow the instructions you have received. To patriots who are not members of organized resistance groups, I say, continue your passive resistance, but do not needlessly endanger your lives. Wait until I give you the signal to rise and strike the enemy.
The Allies continued to build up their forces in France. Within 1 week, they brought nearly 90,000 vehicles and 600,000 men into France, and they pushed ahead. Hitler was furious. He screamed at his generals for not blocking the invasion, and he ordered his troops from nearby areas to join the fight and stop the Allied force. But the Allies would not be stopped. In late August, the Allied forces liberated Paris from the Germans. People cheered wildly as General Charles de Gaulle and free French troops marched into the center of the city. The Allies then moved east into Belgium. They captured the port of Antwerp. This made it easier for them to send supplies and fuel to their troops. Only when Allied troops tried to move into the Netherlands did the Germans succeed in stopping them. American forces won battles at Eindhoven and Nijmegen, but German forces defeated British Red Devil troops in a terrible fight at Arnhem. Germany's brief victory stopped the Allied invasion for the moment. But in less than 4 months, General Eisenhower and the Allied forces had regained almost all of France. At the same time, in 1944, the Soviets were attacking Germany from the east. Earlier, Soviet forces had succeeded in breaking German attacks at Stalingrad, Moscow, and Leningrad. Soviet forces recaptured Russian cities and farms one by one. They entered Finland, Poland, and Romania. By the end of July, Soviet soldiers were just 15 kilometers from the Polish capital, Warsaw. What happened next was one of the most terrible events of the war. Moscow radio called on the people of Poland to rise up against the German occupation forces. Nearly 40,000 men in the Polish underground army listened to the call, and they attacked the Germans. The citizens of Warsaw probably could have defeated the German occupation forces if the Soviet army had helped them. But Soviet leader Joseph Stalin betrayed the Poles. He knew that many members of the Polish underground forces opposed communism as much as they opposed the Germans. He feared they would block his efforts to establish a new Polish government that was friendly to Moscow. For this reason, Stalin held his forces outside Warsaw. He waited while the Germans and Poles killed each other in great numbers. The Germans finally forced the citizens of Warsaw to surrender. The real winner of the battle, however, was the Soviet Union. Both the Germans and the Poles suffered heavy losses during the fighting. The Soviet army had little trouble taking over the city with the help of Polish communists. And after the war, the Free Polish Forces were too weak to oppose a communist government loyal to Moscow. Adolf Hitler was in serious trouble. Allied forces were attacking from the west. Soviet troops were passing through Poland and moving in from the east. And at home, several German military officials tried to assassinate him. The German leader narrowly escaped death when a bomb exploded in a meeting room. But Hitler refused to surrender. Instead, he planned a surprise attack in December 1944. He ordered his forces to move quietly through the Ardennes forest and attack the center of the Allied line. He hoped to break through the line, separate the Allied forces, and regain control of the war. The Germans attacked American troops, tired from recent fighting in another battle. It was winter. The weather was so bad that Allied planes could not drop bombs on the German forces. The Germans quickly broke through the American line. But the German success did not last long. Allied forces from nearby areas raced to the battlefront to help, and good weather allowed Allied planes to begin attacking the Germans. The battle ended by the middle of the following month in a great defeat for Hitler and the Germans. The German army lost more than 100,000 men and great amounts of supplies. The end of the war in Europe was now in sight. By late February 1945, the Germans were forced to retreat across the Rhine River. American forces led by General George Patton drove deep into the German heartland. To the east, Soviet forces also were marching into Germany. It did not take long for the American and Soviet forces to meet in victory. The war in Europe was ending. Adolf Hitler waited until Russian troops were destroying Berlin. Bombs and shells were falling everywhere. In his underground bunker, Hitler took his own life by shooting himself in the head. Several of his closest aides also chose to die in the Führer bunker. One week later, the German army surrendered to Eisenhower and the Allies.
Yesterday morning at 2:41 a.m. at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl, the representative of the German High Command, and of Grand Admiral Dönitz, the designated head of the German state, signed the act of unconditional surrender of all German land, sea, and air forces in Europe to the Allied expeditionary forces and simultaneously to the Soviet High Command.
British Prime Minister Winston Churchill.
Hostilities will end officially at 1 minute after midnight tonight, Tuesday, the 8th of May. We may allow ourselves a brief period of rejoicing. Today is Victory in Europe Day. Long live the cause of freedom.
The defeat of Germany was cause for great celebration in Britain, the United States, and other Allied nations. But two facts made the celebrations less joyful than they might have been. One was the discovery by Allied troops of the German death camps. Only at the end of the war did most of the world learn that the Nazis had murdered millions of innocent Jews and other people. The second fact was that the Pacific War had not ended. Japanese and American forces were still fighting bitterly. The war in the Pacific will be our story next week.
that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world.